Shalom and welcome to Tehillim Yomi. Today we learn Psalm 126, one of the most well-known psalms, as we recited before we do Birkat HaMazon. Shir Malot B'Shuv Adonai Shivat Zion Hayinu Kecholmim. A song of Malot, when the Lord, when God brought back to the captivity of Zion, we were like men who dreamt. Az Yemalei Zchok Pinu L'shonenu Rina, Az Yamru Bagoyim Higdil Adonai L'asot Imele. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then they said among the nations, the Lord did great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us, and we are so glad. Bring back our captivity, O Lord, like the streams in the Negev. Hazorim bedima berina yiktzoru. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. He goes forth weeping, bearing the seeds of sowing, but he shall come back with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. This psalm was chosen by religious Zionists to be the national anthem of the modern state of Israel. It's been used as a prefatory psalm to the Birkat HaMazon for at least 500 years. Rabbi Isaiah Horowitz, a 16th century rabbi of Prague, notes in his famous book, The Shlach, he quotes the custom to recite this before Birkat HaMazon during Shabbat, because it was meant as a reminder of the land of Israel and the temple, which was destroyed, and the desire each Jew should have before reciting Birkat HaMazon. Well, during the week, we read Psalm 137, Al Naharot Bavel, but on Shabbat, we read 126. What is special about this mizmor? The psalm divides neatly into two parallel sections, verses 1 to 3 and 4 to 6. Verse 1 begins with the word Shuv, B'Shuv Hashem, return. And verse 4, the second half, begins with the word Shuvah, return. Verse 1 speaks of the subject of the psalm, Shivat Zion, those returning to Zion to build the second temple. And verse 4 repeats it with the word Shvitenu, those returners. Verse 2 uses the word Rina, and it's parallel. Verse 5 also uses the word Rina. However, upon closer inspection, the psalm reveals that the two halves are not parallel at all. Verses 1 to 3 indicate that the psalm is about a spiritual or historical event, the restoring of the Shivat Zion. And they are written in third person about God. B'shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion, when God returned the people longing for Zion. Az yamru v'goyim higdil Hashem, then the nation said God was great. Hayinu semechim, we rejoice. All these point to an historical event of miraculous proportions. Verses 4 to 6, however, seem to describe an agricultural event. They're written in the second person, straight to God, which give the impression that the psalm was written by farmers asking for their material and needs. A good harvest. Hazarim bedima, berina yiktzoru, those who sow in tears will reap with joy. Haloch yelech uvacha, nosemesha chazara. How can we harmonize these two distinct units in the psalm? So there are three approaches we can take. The first one is to say that the entire Mizmor is about the history. Rashi and Malbim feel that the psalm focuses on a great historical event, the returning of Shivat Zion to Israel. With this approach, the second half of the psalm must then be interpreted figuratively. An Israeli scholar in the periodical Stei Chemed wrote an article expanding on the historical approach. His name is Yosef Efrati. Efrati explains that the setting for the psalm is certainly an historical, miraculous occasion, yet, while life was starting to look up, two fundamental issues still had to be confronted. First, only a very small percentage of the Jewish community returned to Israel. Most Jews were still scattered throughout the Persian Empire. Second, while Jews had a certain illusion of autonomy, the appointed leader, Zerubbabel, though stemming from the Davidic dynasty and therefore a legitimate leader in the eyes of the Jews, did not achieve total sovereignty. Control was still held by the Persian Empire. This did not fulfill the prophetic vision of the Jewish people living freely in their homeland. The author of the psalm, sensitive to these deficiencies, in the second half of the psalm pleads with God to restore Jerusalem to all its glory, to bring about a complete revival in Jewish life, kingship, and religion. Since the Persian Empire was still interfered with this goal, and since it would be catastrophic for the Jews to sing songs of rebellion, revolution, and war, the author opts to hide his plea for total independence. Using metaphors found in the prophecies of Jeremiah and Ezekiel, he sends out a coded message for all to pray for complete redemption. In describing the exile, Jeremiah said, weep and cry as you walk away. And the psalmist encodes by saying, Haloch yelech uvacha, walking and crying. Ezekiel describes redemption in 17:5, saying, he then took some of the seed of the land and planted it in a fertile field. He planted it and set it like a willow beside abundant waters. And the psalmist encodes in our psalm, Hazarim bedima, meshech hazara, planting the seeds in a field. The message in his time was clear and conclusive. While we pay tribute and praise to God for beginning the redemption, and though we have the ability to laugh, complete joy will come only with the final salvation. Just as we witnessed the realization of Jeremiah's prophecy, crying as we walked into exile, so too we hope and pray that Ezekiel's prophecy of rebirth, revitalization, and replanting will be fulfilled. A second approach, called the agricultural viewpoint, the big proponent is a man named Yechezkel Kaufman, an Israeli philosopher and Bible scholar who was best known for his monumental work, The Religion of Israel, Todot HaMana Yisraelit. In one chapter on Psalms, he claims that the Psalm had nothing to do with the Second Temple period. In fact, it's not even referring to an historical event. The Psalm is an agricultural allegory focusing on the people witnessing a rebirth in the crops. We ask God for rain to rush down the mountains, through the watercourses in the desert, to nourish the fields. This theory takes the second half of the psalm literally. Shuva Hashem et Shviteinu, Hazarim Bedima Berini. So return our land to its glory, to a land flowing with milk and honey. Now the farmer cries, he plants the seed, but one day with your help, he will reap rejoicing. The psalm should be understood as a prayer for rain and sustenance. If so, how are we to understand the first part about Shivat Zion, which has no allusions to agriculture? We're forced to read Shivat Zion as something unrelated to any historical event. This is a little difficult to accept for two reasons. First, if we interpret the first half as a praise for the rain they received, it directly contradicts the latter half, that they were seeking rain. Second, why would this be cause for other nations to say the Lord has done great things for them that they're planting? The third approach is a synthesis of the two. Is to accept each half of the psalm as a unique reflection of the sign of the times. The first half indeed refers to an historical event, while the second half relates to the physical agricultural issues. According to this theory, the psalm was written during an historical time period when the hand of God was readily apparent in certain ways, but hidden in others. The psalm begins with an acknowledgement of the miracles the author had seen with his own eyes, something that everyone had dreamed about. It began to transpire. Even the Gentiles praised the remarkable rebirth, and yet the author expresses neither God nor the people completed the task. Then the author prays for total salvation. Perhaps if God helped us, if there was a little more tangible incentive, the majority would rush in ka'afikim ba'negev, like watercourses in the desert. The author recognizes a cyclical pattern. Redemption is set in motion when God reveals himself, albeit in a limited way. For some people, that revelation is reason enough to uproot themselves from their complacent society and make the journey, the Ma'ala, to Israel. The majority wait for the final redemption, or for a more practical incentive to join their brethren. Without a critical mass of Jews, however, the country does not flourish and the nation remains weak. People will move to Israel for two reasons. One, spiritual dimension, the Messiah arriving, or it actually is a successful place, and it's easy for them to live their lives there. Psalm 126 reflects different aspects of praise and different approaches to future redemption. For some, redemption comes through kingship and the reestablishment of the Beit HaMikdash. For others, a reestablishment of agricultural self-sufficiency, every Jew will come back with songs of joy carrying his sheaves. Whether we accept the historical interpretation, the agricultural one, or the synthesis of the two, this psalm has struck a chord in our hearts, perhaps precisely due to its multifaceted meanings. Does it reserve such a strong place in our liturgy? When sitting at our Shabbat table reflecting on a week, we sing a psalm that in some ways talks to all of us. A song of praise, a prayer, a wish for spirituality, without losing sight of our physical needs. Ultimately, it is an acknowledgement of the great hand of God in history, yet at the same time, a plea for the final redemption, when all of us will indeed reap with joy.